Happy New Year!
Is this where we say what?
Happy 2021, whoa, everybody.
Yes. Oh, man.
It still feels like 2020.
New boss looks...
Did you
looks
know that 2021... Chris, did you know that 2021 is actually just three 2020s in a trench coat?
Ooh. Don't put that evil out there.
Oh, man. That's a lot of...
It's the new boss. It looks an awful lot like the old boss.
Yeah, hasn't changed. Got a haircut. The boss got a haircut.
Yeah. So, we took our Christmas off.
Yes.
Matt got COVID.
And pneumonia.
And pneumonia.
Oh,
and
nice.
And then, we had a coup last Wednesday. An attempted coup.
Yeah.
So that's why nothing happened last week.
Man, can we just talk about video games?
Is absolutely.
Okay?
Sure.
We're gonna
I'm sorry. What was that?
I was just gonna say we're gonna do our belated top 10.
Yes, we are. Hey, Matt. For people who think COVID is a liberal hoax designed to get microchips put in you, what do you have to say to that?
They can go suck it. Like, fuck them. Hard. Bruh, nothing about this is the flu.
Yeah. That's legit.
I mean, my case was worse than usual because I also had pneumonia with it. So it was just like a double whammy of really serious respiratory diseases. Let me tell you something that I didn't tell you before, Josh.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell Caitlin at the time because I did not want to worry her. I was 1% oxygen away from being put on a respirator.
Oh, dude, no. Those things, that's the thing that scares me the most about this disease is contracting it and having to be put on a respirator.
Yeah.
Because usually that is like, that's it. That's like...
Oh, trust me, I'm aware. I went in with like a 103 fever and I was at like 87% oxygen and they were like, at 86, we got to put you on. And I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, man. I am very happy that you're okay, that Caitlin's okay, the baby's okay, that everyone is okay, because, I was just, man.
Look, I don't even care that I got the worst of it, because I'm just happy Caitlin and the baby did not. The worst she got was she lost her sense of smell, so she's basically just Chris now.
Yeah, what a crime that is.
Wow.
But,
I mean, Chris, you can't smell?
I have no sense of smell, no.
Oh, that's weird.
My nose is dead. Awful. It's a dead zone.
On the plus side, he has no problem using porta potties during Mardi Gras.
I love them. They're just places to pee, man.
Wow. Wow.
Not a joke.
That's also
he legitimately is like real good at it. He's like, whatever.
Yeah. But
pretty gnarly.
COVID and coups aside, we're talking about the games of 2020.
We are.
Matt has 10, I have 10, Josh has like 5.
That is correct.
Yeah, I don't have a lot. I didn't really play, I played the same games over and over and over because I really liked them.
The mark of a good game. So Matt, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first because I cheated and have 2 honorable mentions.
Oh yeah, do your honorable mentions.
So you know how I love Picross?
Yeah.
Oh no.
But
the
Picross game has never made my list before, and technically still hasn't, because it's an honorable mention.
Mm-hmm.
But this year's Murder by Numbers, the Picross Phoenix Wright combo, was the closest to breaking a top 10 because it was an actual game that just happened to have Picross puzzles in it. So, I dig it.
Progress.
And then my other honorable mention is Maneater, the best game about a shark. It was so ridiculous and so much fun just leveling up shark powers and just destroying everything.
I wish it was a little more solid. I'll talk about it because it's on my list.
Okay, then I'll let you take point on that one. And then number 10 for me was Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. Not a perfect game, but it was the first Dragon Ball Z game to attempt an RPG since the PS2's Dragon Ball Z Saga. Or the Game Boy Advance's Dragon Ball games. So it was a nice change of pace from just being a pure fighting game. I enjoyed just... there was a lot that I wish had been improved, and I hope a sequel does improve, but it was really cool leveling up and upgrading and just feeling like you're growing your characters as the story progresses. So I really dug it.
You told me that came out in 2020 and my mind exploded.
Yeah, January.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that did. That came out January 17th. I'm looking at the 2020 game list.
Yeah.
It came out January 17th.
It was my first game of 2020.
Yes. My number 10 is The Dark Pictures Anthology Presents Little Hope. I am a sucker for these games. I love them to death. I will play every single one. And they have announced the third one, I assume for October of this year. So I am in on this shit. But, objectively, it's not a great game. It's a little... It's running on old ideas from Until Dawn. So, it has to kind of sit at number 10. But I still love them. So, they're my pie cross.
Hey, I mean, no, look. I enjoyed Man of Medan and Little Hope. So, more power to you, brother. I don't know why I went that route.
I don't either, but go for it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Alright, number 9, I have Bug Snacks. Talking about Bug Snacks.
Baby.
The PS5.
Yeah, I don't even know anything about this game. Talk about it, please.
I watched a stream for about 10 minutes and I was extremely confused.
Bug Snacks is one part Pokemon Snap, one part weird Sesame Street Muppets, and one part just fucked up weirdness and a dark twist at the end. And it's so cute and adorable, and trying to figure out how to capture all the Bug Snacks and finding them and just all the dumb puns with their names. Caitlin and I had so much fun playing this together. Bug Snacks was a friggin' delight, and it's free, or was free, on PS5 for PlayStation Plus. So it's just even better.
Okay.
Bug Snacks was amazing.
Okay.
All right. My number 9 is Cyberpunk 2077. A game with a lot of really big ideas, with a really flawed release. I still have fun with it, but I tried to play last night, and the frame rate started just really shitting itself. So I've decided to put it to bed until its patches come out this month. But I'm still going to...
Fun fact, they said...
Sorry, go on. No, go on.
No, I was going to say they announced today that the next-gen patches have been delayed till 2022.
The next-gen?
Yeah, like so that it actually runs well on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X.
Oh, Jesus.
The upgrade's coming out second quarter of 2021, correct?
Not anymore, no. They pushed it back today.
Oh really? I thought the pushback was the 20.
Nah, fam.
21 second quarter 2021.
Jesus. It was original stated time.
But no, I still like Cyberpunk. I wish it just ran better. That's me though.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool.
For me, number 8, I have Astro's Playroom, the built-in tech demo of sorts for the PlayStation 5 that is actually just a love letter of all of PlayStation's history. And if you know me, you know I love my Astrobot games. Astrobot VR is one of my top PlayStation 4 games of all time. And this one was just a showcase for what the PS5 and its controller can do. And then just you add in the nostalgia and the trips down memory lane. And it's just really cool that they touch on all of the moments in PlayStation history from PlayStation 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, their handhelds with the PSP and the Vita, some of their biggest and most niche, obscure games like Vib Ribbon for the PS1. Who remembers that one? They do, because it's in the game. It's just so much fun. It was just like a pure platforming game. It had the kind of inventiveness you usually associate with Nintendo. Like, that's the best compliment I can give Astrobot games, is that they feel like Nintendo games that just happen to be steeped in PlayStation, like, nostalgia. but they play like some of the best Mario games you'll ever come across.
That's pretty bold claiming.
It's actually not that bold. Just go look at anyone else talking about it.
Well, I'm not. I'm talking to you. Listen to you talk about it. My number eight is Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning, a game that I missed when it first came out on systems. I finally gave a fair shake to, and it's a real shame that Kurt Schilling destroyed the state of Delaware for this.
Yeah.
It's a real goddamn shame, because I think there's legs here. I think they could have done something with this.
Womp, womp.
But it's kind of fun, because I really thought we would never get anything Kingdoms of Amalur related ever again. So I'm just pleased that it's out on a modern system. And it runs okay, so.
Okay.
That's good. As long as it runs pretty okay. Straight. That game really wasn't really pulling too many resources when it was on, like, the Xbox 360, so.
Number seven for me is another one, like Bugsnax, that I played with Caitlin. Sackboy, A Big Adventure, is just a blast. It's so much. It's just another just really good platforming game. And I was worried because this game takes away one of the biggest hallmarks of Little Big Planet, the franchise, which is the creative side of it, where you can create worlds and levels and, you know, basically everything that the current Media Molecule game Dreams does.
Mm-hmm.
That aspect's gone, and it's now just the game. But it actually works out in its favor, because one of the biggest complaints I had of the original trilogy was that the actual platforming mechanics never really felt good. Like, it was a very mushy feeling game. Like, the jumping never felt precise. It always felt like floaty. But this game actually is the opposite of that. It's very tight. The gameplay is very solid. The levels are incredibly inventive, and if you have not seen it yet, they've licensed a lot of real-life music and turned them into, like, musical levels for the game. Let me tell you, there was one level that is an instrumental version of Madonna's Material Girl, but it's set into an underwater aquarium level, and it works perfectly, and you just don't think it should. And then there's a space level set to Britney Spears' Toxic. And, like, that's the kind of, like, music that you don't think would work fucking comes out of nowhere, and you're like, what the shit? And it's amazing. The entire level is designed around the beat of the song, and it's so good. And we've been playing it, and we're working towards the platinum, which means that we have found every single thing from every level, and we've beaten every level without dying. It's been a challenge, especially with doing it in co-op, but there's also dedicated co-op levels in this game that are some of the most inventive things. Like, when you figure out how to get around a section and how the co-op comes into play on that, it's another extremely good platforming game that just happens to be on a PlayStation console this year. It's kind of weird that so my favorite platforming games, none of them were on a Nintendo system this year. And we'll get to that, because my number four is another one like that. It's a weird feeling, but good. PlayStation 5 had a dope-ass launch, man. It was so much good stuff on it.
Yeah, there was a funny news story that I... Sorry to interrupt this, but there's a funny news story that I read. Not really that funny, but there apparently news coverage of the PlayStation 5... there was more news coverage about the PlayStation 5 than 10 different humanitarian crises that happened in 2020. So we'll go with that.
Okay.
Womp, womp. So the PlayStation 5 is killing it, by the way.
Real good. All right.
Very hard to get your hands on still.
Your number seven, yeah, it's still impossible to find.
My number seven is Maneater. The out of nowhere shark game that was a total blast and very cathartic, especially as we were in lockdown, going out to beaches and cityscapes and lakefronts. It was just really great. And also, you know, we ate people, and that was fun. I think the only issue is that it doesn't run great on a lot of systems, and it's kind of simplistic, but I still had a lot of fun playing it.
I mean, that's the thing about it, right? It's not a very deep game, but it's so silly and fun that you can't, like, help yourself but enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's something so gratifying about watching your shark turn from, like, a baby to, like, a 30-foot killing machine Megalodon. With bone spikes on its head.
Oh, yeah, I love... Yeah. So you went bone spikes, too? I went the bone Absolutely. Route because I love just fucking dive-bombing boats and destroying them.
Yes. And I thought the bosses were kind of interesting and fun. The named bosses, the yes. killer whale and stuff.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. So I love Maneater.
Alright, well, number six for me is my first Switch code, Switch game. It's Cross Code.
Pow pow.
Pew pew. I loved Cross Code. It's oh my god, it's deep. It is a long game. It is not a game you go to play casually. This was like an 80-hour game, and I did not even close to 100% it. It is an incredible action RPG with puzzles that rival like the best of Zelda or Lufia or any of those games. Like, the puzzles are so good in the dungeons, and the story is actually pretty good. It's like it takes the concept of like Sword Art Online or Dot Hack, where you're playing in the future just this MMO,
mm-hmm.
but you are a character that can't log out, and you're trying to figure out why, and then when you actually figure out why, you're like, holy shit, and then the whole game flips on its head, and, oh, it is an RPG that I was not expecting, and it became one of my favorite indie games of the entire generation.
I was wondering if that game did come out this year,
it did.
And it did.
Okay, well, it came out on PC, I believe, in 2019, but it hit consoles yeah. in 2020.
Yes.
And it's on Game Pass, so if you have an Xbox, you don't have an excuse.
Yeah. An Xbox and Game Pass.
Indubitably.
Yeah. My number six is Watch Dogs Legion. I think Watch Dogs Legion is a fantastic concept. The idea that you can take over other people with special abilities and kind of have them work behind the scenes as part of like this anonymous legion of hackers and hacktivists. I think it's tremendous. I think the main thing that hurts it is the lack of a main playable character.
That's what kept it from my list, is that I think if it had a main character, but then you could also branch out to other people that you recruit, that would have been the perfect, like, mix.
And also, I think another issue is giving you the guy that has the cargo, the hovering cargo thing and nail gun right at the beginning, which makes a lot of things very easy.
Yup, that rideable cargo thing is breaks the entire game.
It does, but I love Watch Dogs. You know, I really wish we had kept with the San Francisco crew, but I really hope it did well enough to continue the Watch Dogs thing, because I would love for them to keep experimenting with this.
Yeah, I really hope so too. For me, number five is Last of Us Part Two.
This is very low.
I mean, it was a tough year. There was some really good games to come out this year. Hmm. Like, we hit... The PlayStation just had a whole lot of swan songs come out. You know what I mean? Like, boom, boom, boom. It kept releasing these generation-defining games. But Last of Us Two, I really love. Caitlin and I played this story together. I know this game is very divisive. I do not subscribe to the issues people had with it. I think those people are upset for the wrong reasons, and they're just projecting. But that's just me. I thought the gameplay was some of Naughty Dog's best. You could every game they elevate their gameplay and make it a little more open-ended, a little more introduce a little more freedom into how you tackle scenarios. And it was just really cool stealthing almost every part of the game that you could. I really dug it. I think it should end. I think if they ever do another Last of Us game, it should not involve Ellie or any of those characters at all. And they should do, like, just go cross-country. Introduce us to new people, maybe at the outset of the outbreak. I don't know, but I think this story should end. You know, don't Toy Story for it, I guess is where I'm going with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was very good. Quite enjoyed it. Chris, what about your number five?
My number five is Resident Evil 3 Make. So I really love this new Capcom of taking their old Resident Evils and really putting a really fresh coat, updating them, making them a little more palatable for a modern audience who never got to play them when they first came out. And this is much in the same vein as Resident Evil 2, and I think we're seeing there's two sides of the coin of how to do video game remakes. I'll talk about the other side a little later on my list. But I think Resident Evil 3 is kind of what you want. It's as near as I can tell, it's very loyal to the old style, the old Resident Evil 3. And I think that comes with its own set of flaws, because I didn't like this as much as Resident Evil 2. But I'm also confused of whether that's because I didn't like just the core Resident Evil 3 concept, or if it's the remake's fault. I'm not quite sure about that. But regardless, I love it. I had a great time playing it. And that's really my main metric.
I mean, that is really all that matters. Josh, what would your number five be?
Nice. Okay, so I really didn't play a lot of newer games this year. I'm looking at my list, and there are like four out of the five games are newer games. But my number five on this list is Final Fantasy XII, the remastered, because I got to play that this year, and I finished it. And it was very, very good and enjoyable. And finishing that game with the remastered version has taken its place as my favorite Final Fantasy.
Nice.
And I love the art concept. I love the world building, because there's so many other games that are tied into this game. And Vagrant Story, one of my favorite action RPG games from the PlayStation 1 era, is kind of tied to this game. And Final Fantasy Tactics and Tactics Advance, you can go on and on and on. And I don't know, it's just a really beautiful Final Fantasy, and it feels like a Star Wars Final Fantasy, because all the characters are very good besides one of them. But I don't know, I got to play it and I got to finish it completely, and very, very enjoyable experience. Even though it came out, what, like 5 years ago? The remastered? 3 years ago?
Did it? I don't know.
I don't know. Does it matter?
Time has no meaning anymore. Remember that.
No meaning. Go pick up. It's a good remaster, actually.
Which game?
Final Fantasy XII.
The Zodiac thing.
The Zodiac game. Killer.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Final Fantasy Ted Cruz.
Yeah, Final Fantasy Ted Jesus.
So number four, Chris, what you got?
My number four is Doom Eternal, which I think is... Doom 2016 is one of my favorite games of all time, and Doom Eternal is that and more. I think it's necessary to point out that it's a little bit... It feels a little bit more bloated than 2016 Doom. But if you like 2016 Doom, all the things you like are there. It's just as fast. It's just as violent. It has a quote-unquote story, but, like, who cares at a certain point? It's a hair not as good as 2016, but it's real, real fun.
So what is the thing that takes it away from the 2016 version of Doom?
It's just there's more... it just feels a little more bloated. There's like more collectibles and more side things to kind of distract you from killing demons.
Okay.
For me, the thing that dropped it from 2016 was the shift to like how you have to use certain abilities to recover ammo or armor, because they don't give you it on the map anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you have to use grenades, or you have to use your flamethrower, you have to use takedowns to replenish stuff that in the old game... So it kind of forced you not to play the way you wanted it? I don't know. That was my issue.
Hmm. I think that's fair.
But I'm glad you like it, because you liking it was way more important because of how much you love Doom 2016.
Yes.
So... Josh, what you got for number four, my dude?
My number four is Cyberpunk 2077. Chris pew. Hit a lot of points. What?
I said pew.
What was that?
Pew!
Oh. Chris pew, hit pew. A lot of points on it. I've had a group of friends who've enjoyed the game so much, and they've constantly kept a text thread that just kept on feeding each other, and it was hilarious. Because they would find a bug, they would talk about the bug, and so on and so on. I really haven't had any major issues playing it on the PlayStation 4 besides a few frame rate drops. But other than that, it's been running pretty okay for how large the game is. And there's some parts of the game that, like, it's really pretty, and I can see it running, like, looking so good on a higher-end PC. And I don't know, I dig some of the story beats. I think some of it's a little strange and a little funky. It's not the best that I think this company could do, but it's a super ambitious game that fell really short, but I like the aesthetics a lot. And I would really hope that people give it another chance after all the patches come out. Just for the support of the game, but like the I don't know, CD Projekt Red, there's a lot of stuff behind this. But my hope is that Shadowrun gets a really cool like treatment like this, and I don't know.
It did. It had that game that came out for the Xbox.
Oh man, no, that game did not exist.
Also, is it just me, or like by the time this game gets patched up to run the way it was supposed to when it launched, who's gonna care anymore?
That should have been when they launched the game, right?
Yeah.
Well, and... they had already had outlined the dates of these major patches. Like, if you already knew your game needed these patches and they were gonna take a couple months, then wait.
This really is a tale of two games, because if you've got a PC good enough, like our friend Kevin, who's got a NASA-level computer, it runs great, and it's a blast, and everything works right. And if you're a peasant like me playing on your original Xbox One, you know, it's ugly, and it's stuttery, and it's kind of hard to see the things that make it so good on PC.
Tis a shame.
It is a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's got a lot of really good bits to it. That's the other thing. Like, there's a lot of really good bits to it that, like, it's like, if only they could have waited to release this game and actually had some real, like, Q&A with, like, this gen or last gen systems and really nailed it out with the Xbox and the PlayStation 4. And then... you know, everything else is just easy. Get it right on those systems, and then the rest just follows.
Yeah.
Matt, what was your number four?
My number four is Ori and the Will of the Wisps for Xbox.
Phew.
I loved Ori and the Blind Forest, and I still steadfastly believe and proclaim that Ori is the only good... exclusive Xbox came out with this entire generation. And I encourage you to tell me a different one, but there are none. So Ori is the best thing Xbox did in the past decade, basically. And this one was even better than the first. It streamlined the gameplay. It improved almost every aspect of it, the new level up mechanics, the way the world, the Metroidvania aspects of it, the story hit harder somehow, even though the first one was a tearjerker, and it's just absolutely jaw-droppingly gorgeous, and the music is just, like everything about it. If you like Metroidvanias at all, Ori is one of the all-time best. So that's my number four. And Chris, you're an Xbox guy. What would you say would be the best
exclusive?
Yeah.
Oh. Ori or Sunset Overdrive.
It's true. Sunset Overdrive would be the next one, but
there's just not a lot to pick from. And Halo 5 fucking sucks. So
yeah.
Although I'm very excited to go back and replay it, and just to see like why I was so angry at it.
Yeah. Mm.
My number three, the other side of the remake coin, Final Fantasy VII Remake. It took some of the game, it expanded upon it, it gave it a new battle system, it gave it a fresh coat. It made me love the characters way more than I ever did playing the original Final Fantasy VII. And
this is your number three?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think that the only issue I have with Remake is that it's incomplete. It's the end of part one. You know, we know it's the end of part one. Although you could take this game as like one chunk and work with it as a whole game. It does have like a beginning, middle, and end. The only problem is like we know that part two's coming, so it'll always feel incomplete until we get the rest of it.
Yeah.
But I think I think the little things they did to kind of, you know, with kind of help Tifa and Aeris and like the possibility of like a branching timeline, I think that's very clever, and I think it's better than just a straight one for one remake of this.
Agreed.
Yeah, I agree. My number three is the Final Fantasy VII Remake as well. I'm in agreement with Chris on this one. This is a great game. This really is a great game. It's a pretty game. It plays very well. The combat system is tweaked perfectly. It feels great. The characters are enjoyable. There's some really great moments in this game where you're like, oh, this is different. This is very, very different. But yet it's the same. And there's a lot of things with the... It's like they know that you know the whole mythology of this world, and they're playing with that. So I feel really good about what they're going to be doing with this series, and I have a feeling that like it's going to be that shock moment of Aerith's death in the first game, but it's going to be something different. Something else is going to happen that's just going to shock everybody. And I don't know. I really enjoy this. I got to play two Final Fantasies this year, which is very rare. And I don't know. This was a surprise. It was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. My number three is Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Oh, wow.
Perfecto.
Yeah, I mean, all the reasons you guys said, but I'm going to throw in that it has the... It did the impossible for me, which made me a fan of Final Fantasy VII. Like, I was always like... I always enjoyed VII, but it was always, like, lower top 10 for me. And then Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, and the battle system, holy shit, it took everything they learned from Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy 15 and perfectly melded it with the turn-based system from the original and created like this amazing amalgamation that I want every Square Enix RPG to use from now
it's
on.
So
like,
good. It was that good.
And then it did just enough different from the story to deviate to feel fresh. Expanding all the Midgar stuff was really cool. And then the twist at the end, how this whole thing was set, that Sephiroth and Aerith could be cognizant that they are, in fact, in a different timeline. Just classic Kingdom Hearts fuckery, just being injected in Final Fantasy VII. I am stoked to see where they're going with this, because I have no idea. And I don't think anybody does.
They definitely. I think they don't.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he had storyboarded out everything.
Yeah.
Because I played Kingdom Hearts, and there's no way you fuckers knew your end game.
I am watching a stream. I've got a stream saved of Kingdom Hearts, and I'm just reminded of how nonsense everything is. Every aspect.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess it's my number two. My number two and my number one were extremely close in final decision. And it was literally the final boss of one game which tipped the tide.
I know which one your number two is then.
My number two is The Last of Us Part Two. I think it is a beautiful, devastating, brutal game that kind of touches on, you know, the dangers of revenge, living in a post-apocalypse and all the horrors that exist in it, and fucking dogs that sniff you out and make me have to kill dogs on game.
Had to walk out of that.
I know The Last of Us is incredibly divisive, and I view it in the same way as movies like The Road, where, you know, The Road is just horrifically bleak, but there is like a beauty to the making of it, and I think it's the same with The Last of Us 2. And aside from the fact that my PlayStation shat itself every time I loaded it up, I was completely immersed. I had a great time with it, even as I was cringing watching, you know, people getting a golf club to the face. The Last of Us 2, man. I love it. I love both The Last of Us games. And that is my number
Josh, number two.
My number two is Nioh 2. And you guys know how much I love this series.
Sure do.
This is... my top two are both samurai games. And they're both completely different type of samurai games. And Nioh 2 is just crazier, over-the-top, ridiculous. I like what Team Ninja does when it's not Dead or Alive.
Yeah.
The combat is smooth. The game looks great. It runs beautifully on a 4K TV, by the way. These guys just kill it. And the DLC is just very good. The adding of different weapon types. It's just, there's so many different approaches to every single battle in this game. It's just satisfying, and you crank up the difficulty and you make it as hard as possible, and just finishing it at that is just, man, it's just a great feeling. It is like the Demon Souls, like, you know, when you go through Demon Souls or a Souls-like game and you finish it, and it's just, there's an accomplishment to it. It's like, I 100% this game, and it's just like, oh yeah, I feel great. Did something in 2020. It's good.
Number two for me was the last game I played in 2020, which is Immortals Fenyx Rising by Ubisoft. Their new game that takes Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Breath of the Wild and made a baby. Just incredible game from start to finish. The humor was so, like, dad jokey and fun, because the whole game is being told by Prometheus to Zeus, because the Titan Typhon has come back and has captured all the other gods. And Zeus goes up to Prometheus and he's like, you know, let me tell you about the hero Fenyx and how she is going to save everybody. And then as you play the game, the two of them are giving commentary over what happens, and they're breaking the fourth wall, and it's enjoyable. The combat is tricky and nuanced enough with all the different enemy types that you feel like you don't just roll up and just button mash. And what's really cool is, just like Breath of the Wild, there's puzzles everywhere. Like, there's hundreds of secrets to discover and chests to open, and they all have some sort of environmental physics-based puzzle involved. But unlike Breath of the Wild, the stuff you get doesn't break after three uses. It's all new armors or new helmets or new swords, axes, or bows, all with like an RPG mechanic. They all have different stats or bonuses and stuff. So when you actually solve a puzzle, you actually feel like you've earned something. And they have really cool dungeons, which are basically the Tartarus vaults are just straight up shrines from Breath of the Wild. Like, this game wears its influences on its sleeve. It is not pretending not to be Ubisoft Presents Breath of the Wild, but all it did was show me that I really wanted to like Breath of the Wild. I just needed it to be a better game, because this game was incredible. I 100%ed it, platinumed the hell out of it. Good stuff. Highly recommend it to anybody that enjoys open world games, Greek mythology, or Breath of the Wild.
All right, that brings me to my game of the year. My game of the year, as you can tell from context clues, is Ghost of Tsushima. A beautiful, lush, well-packed game with a really great story. And as I played this, you know, I was kind of loving it, but I still felt that Last of Us 2 was the better overall thing, until the final boss, the culmination of Jin Sakai's, you know, confliction about duty and honor coming to a head, is a masterpiece. Also, I've never felt cooler than wearing a straw hat and striking dudes down in one slice of a blade.
Oh,
tremendous. Yeah. Everything about Ghost of Tsushima is finely polished. It shines like a diamond. It's kind of the perfect game to end the PlayStation 4 era on.
Good times.
Yeah.
So, Josh, tell me about why you love Ghost of Tsushima.
It's perfect. It really is. The game is... Man, Sucker Punch just delivers. You can't... It's like, I feel like you can't go wrong with these guys. It's like, you give them enough time, you give them enough resources, and they put out something like this. And every single moment of this game is beautiful. Every single set piece in this game... it's alive. It has story. You know, the non-playable characters are living in this world and trying to get by. They give you hints about places and shrines. You go to the shrines, you find little foxes like running around, and you follow them. You see butterflies. It's just, this game's mini-map, the non-existence of it, is just amazing. How nature tells you where to go. The combat, every single conflict is satisfying. Getting in, going in stealth, or going in just like as a badass samurai. It's like all the collectibles are really easy to find, but they're fun to find. You know, the little secrets in the game. This game has almost everything, and it is. That ending of this game, it's like, I don't know who's going to top it. It just, it feels, everything is perfect about that ending. The final meditation, the haiku, the red leaves all over the ground, the choice you have to make. This is, I just don't know where video games go from here if they don't look at this game as like a set piece of like, this is how you do a cinematic video game.
So my number one is Ghost of Tsushima.
Wow.
I love that our number threes and our number ones were all identical.
No correlation on these lists whatsoever.
You mean collaboration?
Yeah.
Or collusion?
That's the word.
Because correlation, Chris, is not the word I would use in this scenario.
Well, you're right.
Anyway, yeah, Ghost Stupid. Like, what is there to say that you guys haven't? I'll just add in that the world was just gorgeous, and the way you explored it, with not having, like, the mini-map or, like, arrows or anything, but the way the wind would dictate you, or how a fox would pop up or a bird would fly in, and that would be your indicator that something cool was nearby.
Yeah.
The fact that you could play stealth or go ball, like, all in and honorable and challenge everyone to a duel, and how the game felt right both ways. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you could go and be the ghost of Tsushima and stealth kill everyone and build up your ghost meter and then just unleash it, which was such a cool mechanic.
Oh,
just the
man.
Way it all went red and black and white, and everyone got terrified of you. Oh, that was so cool. And even just the customization about what you wear and how it makes you look. Like Chris said, put it on the straw hat.
Yeah. Just the Ronin fights. The fights, yes. The five Ronins.
Yes. Oh,
that was
so great.
So cool.
The side quests in this game were so good too. Like, there was some one-off ones, but then there was, like, the multi-layered ones where you would work with your allies. And
yeah, your companion stories are so every single one of them was amazing.
Like,
and it was just,
there was so much good about this game, and the fact that it's right up there with Guerrilla Games pivoting from Killzone and then bringing us Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, you have the Sly Cooper and Infamous people, and then they're like, boom, and here's Ghost of Tsushima, motherfuckers. Like, it's a huge tonal and gameplay shift from what we're used to from them, and they just crushed it. And
they
it's
did.
Really cool that Sucker Punch bookended the entire PlayStation 4 generation. They started with Infamous Second Son, and then they ended with Ghost of Tsushima. And that's just awesome.
Yeah, it was really nice. I wonder if that was planned. I wonder if like,
I
Sucker Punch
was
like, hey guys, we have something that we've been working on, and we're going to save it for the end. Are y'all cool with that? And so he's like, yeah, whatever.
So those are the games of 2020.
Like, yep.
Man.
And
what a weird year.
No, 2021 is going to be a weird year because I'm hearing rumblings that almost everything we expect to come out this year is being delayed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Had two high-profile delays this week.
What was delayed this week?
Hold on, I'm pulling it up.
Yeah.
So this week, Hogwarts Legacy, the big next-gen Harry Potter game.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Was pushed back to 2022. And I cannot remember the other one, but there was one more. Thinking of just talk amongst yourselves. I'm gonna...
Yeah. I was looking at the 2021 release date, and the only thing currently on my list is Hitman 3.
Hitman 3 is going to be awesome, especially because if you own 1 and 2, you get all those entire games get ported into Hitman 3.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
They're very good about that. I think I've decided that 2021 is the year I get deep into Yakuza.
Dude, yes.
This is the year. I'm just...
I love it. You are going to love them.
I started... I'm sorry?
Why wasn't the Yakuza game, like the Dragon, on... No one's played it last year?
I didn't get a chance.
That's because I'm waiting. The PS5 patch, the PS5 patch comes in March, so I'm waiting.
Okay.
And it didn't show up. It's on Game Pass for Series X, and I don't have that.
Oh, it's not Game Pass.
No, it's not. Not regular Game Pass.
Not on any Game Pass.
Oh, I thought it was on Series X Game Pass.
No.
There's... Oh, that's my beat.
No, they're slowly putting Yakuza games on Xbox Game Pass, but 7 just came out. That's not on Game Pass.
Yeah,
I found the other delay.
Which is?
Capcom Pragmata, their new IP that they showed that it was like the space game.
Oh, yeah.
Got pushed back to 2023. However, we did get a release date. Project Athia, that Square Enix PS5 game, is coming 2022.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, just don't be like it's not going to be like other years of delays A lot is going to be delayed because we're now pushing a full year of development being splintered into work from home. I think 2021 might be one of the most barest game launch years of all time, which will probably be good for people that want to buy next-gen systems because soon the demand will drop because nothing new is coming out. So, yeah, so you'll be able to buy them.
What is the word on next-gen systems?
What do you mean?
Like, the word is they're very popular.
Yeah, besides that, like, do we know if there's going to be another big drop for the PlayStation 5 or the Xbox, you know, Series X? Like, are we going to see them in store this year? Is this something that you just have to get them online?
Stores 2021, but it's going to be a bit.
Man.
But like I said, you're right now, like, outside of launch games, it's going to be a while before the next quote-unquote must-play drops. So you have time.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I got. Thank you, everybody.
Yes. So thanks for hanging out for us for the new show of the new year. I think next week we'll dip into comics and see what's going on in the future slate.
What is going on in the future slate?
Well, after viewing the first week, it's not super great.
But they still want to charge you $7 a pop.
Well, I was thinking about this because I looked at the release date for a Superman book coming out next week, and there's four stories in it. So I can understand $7 at that point.
That usually makes a book worse, though.
Yeah. See, the only reason I'm buying the Superman book next week is because it has Midnighter in it.
Fuck.
All right. I know. So yeah, we'll talk about some comic books next week. Maybe we can talk about Wonder Woman 84 if you guys are up for it.
Oh yeah, we haven't really got to talk about that.
Yeah. So we'll have a little poke around and we'll get back to you.
Word.
All right. So
figure something out.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out, everyone. Y'all have a good
fun.
Night. Bye.
Wear your mask.
Yeah, wear a fucking mask. And get the vaccine if you're able.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Bye.
All right, y'all too. Later.